So, this morning, the title for this morning's homily, in case you're wondering where it's all going in the end, I'm going to give you a title. And the title is, The Center of Everything. Okay? So just remember those words. There was an expression that the ancient Romans had, which said, act according to your beliefs, or you will start to believe according to the way that you act. And we see that in life all the time. When people are going to confession regularly and doing conscience exams and everything, your conscience starts to get very delicate and you start to understand more and more what offends God, but also what pleases God, and you start to live a life more and more aligned with trying to live in union with God because you value that relationship of intimacy and love with Him. On the other hand, we also see when we regularly commit sins, gradually our conscience just starts to die, and then we start justifying things that are bad. We convince ourselves it's not so bad, and it actually gets to a point where we actually call what is sinful virtuous and what is virtuous sinful. I always pick on the woke element of culture because frankly it got to be so bad. And I realize it's still being taught in the schools, and you poor young people are still getting spoon-fed all this stuff all the time. But fortunately, culture seems to be a little better than it was a couple years ago. But it got to the point where marriage between a man and a woman was called oppressive and patriarchal and you know, something that needs to be done away with, and things that were just common human nature and ordinary virtuous behavior. If you did something like you helped poor people, you were looking down on them, you know. And everything that was good was being called bad, and everything that was bad was being called good. And this is what happens when we stop listening to our conscience and just simply doing kind of whatever we want. The same thing applies to what is our conception of God. Okay? When we kind of just live whatever life, we get these weird ideas about God and about who Jesus is. And you know, sometimes you go to some of these parishes or some of these other Protestant churches, for example, and you hear them teaching, if Jesus were on the earth today, he would want people to do fill in the blank. And you're like, are you stoned? I'm sorry. And the truth is, and I think this is what this gospel shows us, if we want to truly see God for who he is and understand God for who he is, we need, like the apostles, to climb the mountain. Okay? And what does that mean? Obviously, Mount Tabor, the climb of Mount Tabor, or there's a symbolic element to it. But what happens in the gospel is Jesus takes his three beloved disciples. Why he doesn't take the other nine is the subject for another homily. It's always a little bit of a mystery, but frankly, Jesus just does have favorites. Jesus brings these three people up the mountain. Now, to get to the top of the mountain, you have to put in work. Mount Tabor, we're not talking, he's not climbing Mount Everest, or he's not climbing Mount Hood or something like that. It takes about an hour and a half, roughly speaking. It's, you know, 1,000 or whatever feet tall, I don't remember. It's not a super difficult climb. If you look at a picture, it almost looks artificial because the landscape around is pretty flat. You just got this very gradual round lump. There's not like any particularly steep parts to it, but it's there. But you have to put in the work. And that symbolically is what we would call asceticism. In the spiritual life, if we want to advance, the first stage and the basic stage is we need to live ascetical practices. Asceticism means basically prayer and sacrifice, okay? We gotta put in the work. You have to start making the effort to avoid sin. You need to start, you know, fasting and praying more and going to church and receiving the sacraments more and doing all the stuff that we normally think of in the spiritual life, kind of the spiritual grind. And it's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. Then what happens is, when we reach a certain stage in the spiritual life, there's always going to be asceticism. There's always going to be putting in the work. But when we reach a certain stage of the spiritual life, the contemplative life begins, and that's when, on top of the fact that you're putting in the work and you're grinding to, in order to get closer to God, then God, because he knows he can do whatever he wants with you and you become more and more spiritually open, then he starts to pour graces on you and he reveals himself with complete freedom. When he wants, how he wants, and the way that he wants, he reveals himself to you in a deeper, more mystical way, which is what happens to the apostles on Mount Tabor. Nothing that they did earned the vision that they received. It was completely God's gift. But had they not put in the work, they wouldn't have experienced it. And that's symbolic of the way the spiritual life works for us. Lent is a climb of Mount Tabor. Lent is, or Mount Tabor is, if you want, a symbol for Lent. It is by taking on spiritual practices, by taking on prayer and fasting and almsgiving and sacrifices and works of charity and all the things, all those Lenten resolutions that we make, it is a period in which we're doing extra stuff, and that brings us closer to Christ. It brings us, makes us more generous, but it also opens up our hearts so that when Jesus wants to reveal himself in a special way, we are more receptive. And if you don't do the work of Lent, you don't receive the glory of Easter. Just like if the apostles wouldn't have done the work of climbing Mount Tabor, they never would have had the vision, which was a pure gift on God's part, but they wouldn't have received it. Okay? The second thing is this. When they climb Mount Tabor, there is separation. When you're climbing Mount Tabor, it means that all the world, like the villages and everything that are down below, they're leaving behind, quote unquote, the world, the noise of the world. That also has a symbolic application for us. That means that each one of us, every day, do we create time in my day? Do I create spaces in my day where the only thing I'm dedicating myself to is prayer? You know, it doesn't have to be hours and hours. It's great if you've got the time. Some of you actually do that, but at least 10, 15 minutes. Like, for example, if I take on the commitment to pray the rosary every day, if you pray the rosary every day well, and that's the only thing you do, that's going to bring you to holiness, doing it every day, day in and day out. But to pray the rosary well, it's not the same praying it as you're driving down Fifth Avenue in Manhattan and swearing at the traffic around you. I mean, I have been known, and I sometimes will pray my rosary while I'm driving, but that's not, I don't normally consider that like my main rosary. That's like something extra. I may or may not be paying attention to how many decades I'm praying. That's a different thing. But we should have time that we just simply, you know, in your bedroom or in the Adoration Chapel or some space that's going to allow you to pray well. The right time of day, the right place, where you can say, at least for these 10 minutes or whatever it is in the day, I'm going to give God the best that I have. If you just simply do that, that is a great beginning to a prayer life. Now, as we obviously advance, you need more and more. God's going to constantly require more of you in order to be able to give you more. That's one form. The second form is doing a retreat. The retreat is like the next stage. When you do a retreat, you're taking like an entire day or an entire weekend or maybe even an entire week or something like that to create that space. Why do we go on retreat? It's because we realize when I'm living in my day-to-day, there's always a lot of noise bombarding me. And if I really want to hear Christ, I really want to encounter Christ, then I need to make time. Actually, all of you high schoolers, we have, even though it's only, like, you know, a weekend long, but we have a weekend retreat coming up. All of you high schoolers, I would recommend sign up. It's a great way to be in a setting where you can experience God, where you're putting yourself in a setting where God wants to tell you something. God wants to give you an experience. He wants to reveal something to you. You're putting yourself out there. So I would look at your bulletins. It's in the announcements and everything. Sign up for the JCC retreat. It's going to be a good experience, okay? The third, like the next level after that is like being a monk or being a nun. Like there are people that dedicate their entire lives. They live in monasteries. They're separate from the rest of the world. Frankly, there may be people here in this church right now who have a calling to that, to dedicate yourself 100% to God. All right? And some of you, even like us, I'm in a religious order, but I'm not monastic. I'm in the world doing active stuff. But some people are called simply to go, like in the monastery, work and pray. You know, it's just a setting where you put everything else behind so you can just focus explicitly on the things of God. Now, in the actual gospel that we read, the Transfiguration, there's something cool that happens. We see that the Transfiguration is Jesus showing us that he, in the end of the day, is the center of everything. And what do I mean? First of all, when the apostles awake, because they're actually asleep, that's actually something that should console us. Even when the apostles are asleep, Jesus is free to act, and you know, this huge theophany with lights and clouds and voices and everything, and they wake up like, what's going on? So when you fall asleep, God can even work then. Just be awake, be attentive. But Jesus is in the absolute center of everything. So first of all, we see in the person of Jesus, you see humanity and divinity unite in the person of Jesus. He's the center between God and man. He is both. You see his humanity, he's still a human being, but he is so radiant and so glorious that the likes of which nobody has ever seen before. His humanity is totally penetrated with his divinity, so people, you know, he doesn't look like any of us in the church. He looks absolutely radiant, and at the same time, you see, this is the miracle of Jesus' divine humanity, that God made himself a man so that he could be this point of union that would draw us into God and would draw God into our lives. Everything is focused on Jesus. We see the Old Testament and the New Testament are united, and Jesus is the center point. When Moses and Elijah are talking, they're not talking to the apostles. It's like, almost like they don't care about Peter and them. They're talking to Jesus. Their focus is on Jesus. And what they're focusing on is how he is the fulfillment of everything that they did. And what he's about to do in the future is going to kind of wrap up and put a bow on everything that Moses and Elijah and all the prophets, everything in the Old Testament, it gets fulfilled and summarized in Jesus. And the apostles are there representing the New Testament, and they're looking kind of, they're both looking at each other with Jesus in between them. And he is the point, he's the center of everything in the Bible. The entire Bible's whole meaning comes down to what Jesus did and is going to do in just in a little bit. And where he is the center of all of our purpose. Got notes here. Okay. The Mount Tabor, Jesus is also the center. In a certain sense, you see heaven and earth united. When you climb a mountain, it's kind of like symbolically, like you're climbing up, and any mountaintop is a place where heaven and earth touch, right? So Jesus, who's on the earth, is there. But then it's like the Father comes down, this cloud comes down, and the Father's voice comes down, and heaven and earth are united. And where do they touch? They touch in the person of Jesus. And it's also, if you want, it is a union between what you and I live right now in our day-to-day life and what you and I are called to live in the future, what we will become if we are faithful. You see Elijah and you see Moses, and they're totally glorious too. They're not as glorious as Jesus. He's like on a different level. But Moses and Elijah are these glorious figures. And Peter and James and John are kind of more or less like you and I are, just like ordinary. But you see, what Moses and Elijah are experiencing in this moment is what Peter and James and John are going to be called to, and perhaps even higher and greater. And the same is true for us. When they're looking at the Transfiguration, and they're looking at these glorious Old Testament figures, the subtext is saying, if you follow me, you're going to be like them. And that's something that each one of us needs to keep in mind. What Jesus is doing, when he allows us to go through the grind in our day-to-day life, it's because he wants to prepare us. He wants to bring us to that kind of a state. When he shows us Moses and Elijah, you know, he didn't have to have Moses and Elijah there. He could have just simply glorified himself and been boom, and it would have been enough. But showing Moses and Elijah is also showing, this is what you guys, if you are faithful, this is what I can and what I want to do with you. When Moses and Elijah are talking to Jesus, again, talking about Jesus being the center of history, they say they're talking about the exodus that he's going to experience. Well, we know the exodus was when Moses led the people of Israel, obviously God did it, but through Moses, led the people of Israel out of Egypt, through the Red Sea, into the desert. Why did God choose to lead them through an ocean, through a sea? Because the sea, symbolically for the Jewish people, it represents uncertainty, it represents danger, it also represents death. And the idea is, it's like the people of Israel came in a certain sense, the old Israel died, and a new Israel came out on the other side with a new life. And this life is the life of a people that has been called by God to live in this covenant with him. Well, guess what? Jesus, through his passion, death, and resurrection, is doing that, but he's fulfilling what before was just symbolic. He's doing it all the way, which is why Jesus has to die, because he's going to bring about, he's not just going to take our life and just make it a little bit better. He's giving us a completely new life. That's what we're going to celebrate in Easter in a few weeks' time. And again, the center of all of this is the person of Jesus. So I'm going to wrap it up because I've got more stuff I can say, but I'm not even going to go there. I'm going to wrap it up just with this. And the very last thing is, Jesus tells the apostles, okay, don't tell anybody, which is always mysterious when Jesus does that. It's like, why would Jesus say, okay, I'm going to show you this totally spectacular thing, but shh, secret, you don't get to talk about it. And the other guys must have been just like, why did Jesus tell them, shh, quiet? Because Jesus didn't have to show these three apostles this thing, but he did it for a reason. It wasn't so that they could just go up and have some spectacular experience, which they did in that moment. It was because he knew what was coming down the line. And when Jesus got called into question, when it seemed like everything Jesus had promised was a lie, when it seemed like everything that they had put their hopes in was a failure, when it seemed like, what the heck have we been doing with the last 3 years of our lives? Nothing makes sense. They would be able to look back and say, he prophesied this. He already told us about the exodus that he was going to go through. And we already saw that despite everything that happened, we saw him glorified. We saw Moses and Elijah, of all people, saying, you are the center. You are the reason for everything. And it gave them something that they could hang their hats on. And at that moment, I guarantee you, they did tell the others. And at that moment, when things didn't make a lot of sense, that was something that they could continually go back to. Well, guess what? In our own lives, Jesus wants to do things like that too. Why do we go on retreat, and why does God sometimes give us these spectacular experiences, and then it seems like they disappear? Because when hard times come, and they will, you, if you are a prayerful person and you remember these things, will always have something to go back to and say, I'm going through a hard time now, but I remember the experience Jesus gave me in the Adoration Chapel, in the Healing Mass, or whatever it was. And I can go back to that when things don't make sense. And that will give me the strength that I need. So, in the end, Lent is a time to climb the mountain. It is a time to go to Mount Tabor, to put in the grind, so that Christ can reveal himself to us as the center of everything. In the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.